My guest at this time is Christopher C. Horner. He's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Washington. He was also a member of President Trump's landing or transition team at the Environmental Protection Agency. Now back in the private sector full time, Chris is urging President Trump to withdraw from the climate change agreement signed onto by the Obama administration during its final months. We also want to get some of his insights into how Trump is approaching environmental issues. And Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Let's start with what we've heard just in the past couple of days with regards to the budget. The budget came out, I guess it was on Wednesday or Thursday, and there was a 31% cut earmarked for the Environmental Protection Agency. That issue came up at a briefing at the White House by Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, and here's what he had to say about the climate change money.
Regarding the question as to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. Is that we're not spending money on that anymore. We consider that to be a waste of your money to go out and do that. So that is a specific tie to his campaign.
Chris, I'm sure that's music to your ears, but how significant is this change in approach from the new administration?
Well, the change in approach itself is complete. So in that respect, it's significant. It's also a complete departure from anything you might expect from any administration, which is usually we will just slow the rate of growth no matter what they think of something. That's sort of the worst thing they would ever consider doing to it. And this is saying, look, we are trillions in debt. He didn't mention this, but nobody claims any of these programs would actually impact the climate. There's no, even the Paris Climate Treaty. Did you know that the EPA administrator, I'm sure you did, had testified that her rules, these energy rationing rules that President Trump is also expected to announce he will rescind this month, they would have no detectable impact on climate. She just, despite the terrible cost, and they've already imposed great costs, just the anticipation of them and in investments not made and so on, with no impact on climate, but they would be, in Gina McCarthy's words, the former administrator, of great symbolic value. Okay, well, he's throwing this out the window saying we're trillions in debt. Symbolism's the first thing to go. This is a waste of your money. And so I think that was fantastic. They also, it was somewhat lost in this, but they're repurposing EPA to EPA's core mission. EPA has obviously statutory mandates. They have statutory deadlines. They've never met when they liked. But they go off on these very expensive, very harmful hobbies and ideological axe grinding. And what they're saying is, you seem to have an awful lot of time and other people's money to do that. Why don't you stick to your knitting and focus on actual environmental problems and actual environmental mandates from Congress?
This goes to pretty much what you were just talking about, Chris. But earlier this week, there was a story in Reuters saying, quote, now President Donald Trump is set to sign an order to greatly reduce the role climate change plays in decision making across the U.S. government. It aims to reverse former President Obama's broad approach for addressing climate change. So it's not really being factored into how policy is made. Talk about the significance of that.
Okay, this is sort of weedy and yet extremely important. So what happened was President Obama said, you may have seen the news stories, he hid $77 billion of other people's money sprinkled around other agencies where he didn't think we could find it, and calling it by name using words other than climate. This was a plan to get every agency to cite to climate as their reason for doing anything that a progressive administration would want to do. And as you know, as we just discussed, Republican administrations generally, when's the last program that was actually killed? And so what they would do is in lean years, maybe slow the rate of growth, but they would continue on and cite climate for any priority. Well, President Trump, in saying we're not going to use this, what they it was a pure invention called social cost of carbon. What is the cost to society of being subjected to the horrors, the tyranny of abundant, affordable, reliable energy? And so they came up with a number. Well, it turns out this was pure invention, and not only was it invention, it was a rule-breaking invention. The Office of Management and Budget says if you're going to estimate, you're going to project impacts, you have to consider certain discount rates and so on. And these people actually refused to use what they were told to because it gave them the wrong answer. So this social cost of carbon that agencies will no longer be using to justify everything they want to do and every expense they want to make and impose upon you was a pure invention, and they said enough with it. And this is very justifiable. They will have to go through the regulatory process, but it is a very welcome move. Again, you do not expect actually undoing things, even if a politician ran on it, and you're seeing it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the EPA. As I mentioned in the beginning, you were on the landing team, the transition team, a team that was headed up by your colleague at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Myron Ebell. Chris, you've obviously studied the EPA for a long time. You know a lot about it. But once you had this role, was there anything there that particularly surprised you or made you drive certain recommendations to the incoming administration?
Well, the number of employees, I can't talk about what I did, but you might imagine that in a sprawling agency like this, that somebody like me might have encountered somebody who couldn't tell you how many people were working in that office. As a pure hypothetical. Well, purely hypothetically, that's not a good answer if you're insisting, as hypothetically many people did, that however many people work for them, they need more money to properly do their job. Why? Because the agency is just so darn big. Well, this is not limited to EPA, but it is certainly hypothetically exaggerated at the EPA level. This is an agency that has grown from essentially an executive order over time to consume major parts of the economy and, of course, tax revenues and our debt. And so the expansion from the statutory mission is breathtaking. The insistence by people, including those who you might imagine can't even tell you how many people work there, that they need more money to do their job because the agency is so big. And yet if you ask them, what is your role in, for example, the federal-state partnership? They will tell you it is partnering. Okay, well, that's a big flag that maybe this is a good place to save some money. Now, all of this is hypothetical, of course, but it's a reasonable surmise based on everything that's out there that this is how EPA is operating. So it's a very good place to start with cuts, including because this was, for the first time ever, a major issue in a presidential, in a political, but a presidential campaign. Please remember, Greg, Al Gore, who says this is his life's defining, his central organizing principle, didn't want to run on this when he ran for the White House. Though he clearly felt it, he didn't want to pursue it because he knew it doesn't sell well. Well, after this is really taking root in our economy and causing the devastation it is, President Obama, deceived on it. In 2012, running for re-election, as my colleague William Yateman at the Competitive Enterprise Institute has detailed, was very disingenuous about what he planned to do until he got re-elected. Nobody ran on this. Congress never spoke on it. The courts have imposed this, signing off on what activists in government have wanted to do. And President Trump actually, for the first time, ran on it. And you know what? This was actually a very big issue in the election. Arguably, it was the margin. So in these key states, these key states that want to recover their manufacturing industries and so on and like abundant, reliable energy. And so this is a very encouraging sign. As I mentioned, you don't typically see real reform. You see tinkering at the rate of growth, and that is assailed as a deep draconian cut when it's just a reduction in the rate of growth. He's saying, look, this is a waste of money. We're trillions in debt. Now's the time. If not now, when? And that is precisely the attitude that needs to be adopted.
Well, there's another thing you'd like to see the administration do, and you have written about this with your colleague Marlo Lewis at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and that is formally withdraw from the climate change treaty that was signed in Paris in the latter stages of the Obama administration. One of the things we know about this, in order to get everybody on board, is that most, if not all, of the tenets here are voluntary. So explain why it's really important to get out of it officially.
Right, and Marlo and I have a major paper coming out on this very soon because it's so important. This is the successor to the Kyoto Treaty, which was, it all springs from a 1992 voluntary, but very important, treaty. It was voluntary, and yet it was a treaty. So claiming Paris is voluntary doesn't mean it's not a treaty. That's a non sequitur. That's never been the test. This is purportedly the extension of the 1992 voluntary treaty, requiring us to make a new promise of deeper and deeper cuts of the sort President Trump is supposedly now announcing in coming days that he's going to rescind. We're going to continue those in our promise under this treaty and make them stronger and deeper and more painful every 5 years. Well, the 1992 voluntary agreement was not a blank check. And in fact, the Senate, controlled by George Mitchell, the majority leader, a Democrat from Maine, and Claiborne Pell, the Foreign Relations Committee chairman, a Democrat from Rhode Island, were very clear. It's in the report. This is not a blank check. If you want to make targets and timetables, you have to come back to the Senate because we have a constitutional process. Well, President Obama and our negotiating partners, particularly the two lead French negotiators, their foreign minister and the president of the negotiations were open about their disdain for our system, saying everybody's aware of it and we just need to game it. We just need to say it's not a treaty. And so 4 months before the terms were even agreed, they said, I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you it's not a treaty. In other words, whatever happens, we're going to say it's not a treaty. That is a what are you going to do about it approach. If you live by that, it's like pen and a phone. If you live by the what are you going to do about it approach, then it can also die by it. And President Trump promised to get out of, he said, cancel the Paris Climate Treaty. He said, because it's bad for U.S. businesses. And that's true. It's bad for the U.S. economy. There are what we call rent-seeking businesses pushing this who will benefit because, just like green jobs, if you rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul's all for it. And he said because it would allow foreign bureaucrats the power to control how much energy we use. Well, nothing about that has changed. President Trump needs to keep this promise, no matter how many people in his inner circle, whether related or not, whether industry or not, say, no, you need to break this promise. The more honorable course, Mr. President, is in just saying, I won't undo the promise, I'll just break it, the promise, the Paris Treaty. The more honorable course is keeping your campaign promise and saying, this is bad for us, it's going to allow other people to tell us how much energy we can use, and undo this. Now, the reason it's important is exactly the reason the president you're hearing, President Trump needs to just break this campaign promise and stay in the Paris Treaty. Diplomatic blowback. Well, I fail to see the threat. As you know, diplomatic blowback was the whole point of Paris. Even Obama administration White House officials said it was about naming and shaming. That means us. Until we relent, particularly every 5 years, it was about diplomatic blowback. That's not a bug. It's a feature. It's the point of the Paris Treaty is to put diplomatic blowback on the U.S. anytime we think about not doing what they said. So President Obama, on his way out the door, committed us to this. It was an illegitimate commitment. We have a process for this, and he chose not to do that. And he did this with the active participation of his negotiating partners, none of whom can then claim they're surprised, having expressed full knowledge and awareness of our system, that we're going to abide by our system. So you will find that we are effectively bound by this. It is a treaty. That's not so much the important point. The important point is if there are reason not to get out of this, you would hear it. And instead you're hearing diplomatic blowback, which is if you want to see diplomatic blowback, stay in Paris. It's the point of Paris.
Chris, last question. Is there any particular deadline or timeline on withdrawing from this? I'm sure you'd like to see it as soon as possible, but is there any particular timetable you have in mind?
Well, as you and I are speaking, the G20 finance ministers we've finally gotten out. People like me have prevailed, and people like me in the White House have prevailed and gotten language out of this G20 draft statement of finance ministers, the Treasury Secretary, with very little help from Treasury, by the way. That was one soft deadline we've avoided. By May, it is clear we will have had to have made our position. Is he going to keep his campaign promise to the American people, or say he needs to break that in order to keep President Obama's promise on his way out the door to people who want to make us promise to do harmful things every 5 years, ever more harmfully. So by May, I would say if President Trump doesn't get out of this in the next 2 months, probably 6 weeks, and certainly by the July G20 meeting in Hamburg, July 7th, 8th, then we are, again, if not now, when, then we're probably in this forever. And you're going to see the pain of the sort that was pointed out in the presidential campaign of these policies, but worse and worse every year, with more and more promises to make it worse every 5 years. He must strike now on this one, I have to say.
Okay, real last question. How confident are you that he's going to do it?
I'm not, to be honest with you. It's my understanding that the arguments have been made, and the president just awaits a decision. We know where the various camps are. But just this past week, there were reports that the White House is reaching out again to various factions. So they may have reopened it. I suspect that the wrong result was reached, and folks are realizing that this is a big deal. There's video of the president saying not only he's going to cancel this, but why? And the reasons are serious, and they haven't changed. So I'm encouraged that the issue seems to be open again, because I think the wrong answer was reached. So we've got time, but I have to tell you, I'm not in the end very confident, because Well, because people very close to the president are pushing for him to break this campaign promise.
Chris, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for your time, as always.
Thank you, Greg.
Chris Horner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, also a member of the president's landing or transition team at the Environmental Protection Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.